start the Meshechot on Parshas Achrimo, and we'll start with the passage that he has on page Reish Lamed Bay, the middle of the left-hand column. Of course, we know the beginning of Parshas Achrimo is very famous. It's the description of the Avodas Yom HaKippurim, of the Korbanos that were brought on Yom Kippur. And the Pulpit starts off by telling us, by Gavir HaShem Moshe Achrimo, Shnei B'nei Aaron, the Korbanos of Hashem and Yomusu. Hashem spoke to Moshe after the death of the two sons of Aaron when they came before Hashem and they died. The reference to Nadav and Abihu, of course, died on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, as we learned back in Parsha Shmini. And then the Pulpit continues by Yomer Hashem El Moshe, that Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, Dabir El Aaron Ochicha, speak to your brother Aaron, and tell him, that the idea of going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim is not something which is a constant, but the going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim is something which is restricted to the holiest day of the year, to Yom Kippur. The Meshech Chochmah calls attention to the fact that that second Pulpit, Pulpit Beis, the introduction to Pulpit Beis, seems to be somewhat extraneous. No, thank you. I appreciate it. Right? It's, the Pulpit Aleph says, by Dabar Hashem Moshe, Hashem spoke to Moshe, and then Pulpit Beis reiterates, by Yomer Hashem El Moshe, Hashem spoke to Moshe. We already know that, right? In other words, why is there a need to reiterate the idea that Hashem spoke to Moshe? Why don't you just say something like this? Vaydaber Hashem al Moshe achrei Moshe nebnei Aaron v'korbanos l'fnei Hashem v'yomusu. Daber el Aaron achicha. Why do you have to repeat again? Vayomer Hashem al Moshe. One might be inclined to say that the first pasuk was just so long that, you know, we just have to remind ourselves afterwards that Hashem is speaking to Moshe, but again, you know, understandably, that answer doesn't really, quite do the pasuk justice.
But don't we have a saying that when it's just like God, our usual action for sure?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, there's a sort of...
Right. So that is so. But that is so with the kasha. We start off by Yadavir, Alash and Kasha, right? That's the stronger language which is used in Pasuk Aleph. And then for the very same communication, Pasuk Beis describes this Alash and Amiro by Yomer Hashem Al Moshe, which is considered to be Alash and Rachel, which is considered to be a softer or a more gentler form of communicating. So why the change? How could the same items be communicated first in a Lashon Kasha and then in a Lashon Raka, afterwards? So the truth is, Meshech Chochmah answers both of these questions. Rabbi Korbanos L'fnei Hashem v'yomusu. So first of all, just in terms of the simple pshat in Pasuk, that's the Meshech Chochmah pirush v'yomusu l'fnei Hashem. That is to say, you have to invert the phrases in the Pasuk. The Korbanos, right? L'fnei Hashem, v'yomusu l'fnei Hashem, that they died before God. V'lachein kofal hadover v'yomer, daver el aron achicha. Why is there a doubling up of the idea of Hashem speaking to Moshe, first in Pasuk Aleph, and then in Pasuk Beis? L'fnei shedoshu mehanu tzarim, shekol b'nei aron hoi v'unum li'tzarim. Chazal tell us, back in Parshas Shmini, that the truth is, really all four sons of Aaron should have died because of the various sins of Aaron HaKohen. And after all, Aaron HaKohen was involved in making the Eidol Hazor. And some Midrashim connect the death of Nadav and Abihu as being a partial punishment for Aaron HaKohen. That's not just because of what they did, but it's additionally, it's a punishment for Aaron HaKohen. And a lot of his followers say his Midrashim really should have been, by rights, they should have died as well, as a punishment for Aaron HaKohen's involvement in the Eidol. Rashi Tzivot, so Shal Moshe, Otis Omechso. But Chazal tell us that the Tzivot of Moshe Rabbeinu were able to work halfway. So, whereas Nadav and Abihu died, Elazar and Itamar were spared. Yeah. So, it gets involved in the general question that you have. Sometimes some people are punished for the sins of others, right? So, apparently over here, Nadav and Abihu, certainly earned their punishment by doing this as well, right? But perhaps the Lozer had certain Averis as well, which compounded with the fact that Aaron HaKohen had been involved in the Maaseh HaEgel, the combination of those two things you know, would have decreed for them to die were it not for the intervention of Moshe Rabbeinu. He davened for all of them, and I guess for five, and for Aaron as well. And the tefillah worked for Aaron, the tefillah worked for Eloz and Yisomer, but was not successful for Nadav and Abihu. Well, look, I mean, the road to purgatory is paved with good intentions.
Yeah, he had good intentions.
That's right. But Lamaisa, he was responsible for, you know, for this tremendous, tremendous sin. Sometimes, you know, sometimes I meant well isn't always an excuse. You know, sometimes you can mess up even by meaning well. I'm sorry? Yeah. I mean, right. I mean, Aaron did wrong by enabling the building of the Egel Hazav. Now, again, there's a difference between saying that somebody did wrong and someone maliciously did wrong. He wasn't, you know, he definitely had reasons for what he did, and, you know, the reasons perhaps are defensible. But at the same time, you know, he did something wrong. In other words, one can have good intentions but still end up doing something which is wrong, which is incorrect. Yeah, well, the other Kohanim were all anointed with Shemen HaMishcha, and as a result, they had the halach of Kohanim Gedolim. You know, so they were not permitted to show any kind of Avelos. Oh, okay. So, the Gemara, again, the Meshach HaKol quotes the Gemara that really, Elazar and Yisomer should have died at this time as well, but the Tefillah of Moshe Rabbeinu was able to help for them. Moshe Omer, Gam v'Aaron hispanach Hashem v'etz palel. But as the Pasuk says later on in Sefer Devarim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was angry at Aaron after the Egel Azov, and Moshe Rabbeinu had to daven on behalf of Aaron. L'chein Omer Elov, Daber el Aharon, she'ochichahu, Pirush. L'lefikach haninosei l'ponim abonim hanotzorim, but Daber Elov, she'ochichahu. The third Meshach HaKol, what's going on over here in the Tzukim, is as follows. By Dabar Hashem al Moshe, after Moshe had been Aaron, because also by Hashem by Musa. God communicated to Moshe after the death of the children of Aaron, right? Shnei b'nei Aaron, the two sons of Aaron, and the two, and not the four. That seems to be the way the Meshach HaKol is reading the Pasuk. Right? So after that event took place, Hashem communicated the entire parsha about all this Yom HaKippur, which we're going to read about. That's point number one. However, Pasuk Beis is bringing out a different point. Separately from that, by Yom Hashem al Moshe, Daber al Aharon, Ochicho. Hashem says to Moshe, go speak to Aaron and tell him that because he's your brother and because you davened on his behalf, basically that's what saved Elazar and Yisomer. Right, so and there are two separate communications to Moshe Rabbeinu. One communication in Pasukah to Moshe Rabbeinu here is the whole parasha of Avodat Yom HaKippur, everything we're going to read in this Tzarek. The second communication, which is introduced by Yomer Hashem al Moshe, is a different idea. You know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, Daber al Aaron Achicha, go tell Aaron that the reason that his other children were spared is because he's your brother, and you daven on his behalf. Otherwise, all four would have died, not one of this one. Right? Although he doesn't address the issue of Vayidaber versus Vayomer, L'chaura, the interpretation of Meshach HaKol, you know, happens to work well for explaining that as well. The first pasuk, Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe, just tells him, you know, these are the laws of the Avodas Yom HaKippur. So the same way that, you know, throughout Chumash, we find Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe Leimor, that the term Vayidaber is used when conveying halacha, so to over here, you know, the same Vayidaber is used. But the second pasuk already is not talking about halachas. The second pasuk is communing something very human
to Moshe Rabbeinu to tell Aaron, Vayomer Hashem el Moshe. Kadosh Baruch Hu speaks to Moshe in a softer, more comforting type of tone. Go to your brother Aaron and tell him. You know, put your arm around him and tell him, my dear brother Aaron, you should know that because you're my brother and I got him for you, Kadosh Baruch Hu spared you the death of your other two sons. Right? And that said, the Lashon Racha, because clearly dealing with Aaron HaKohen, who is bereaved, at this moment, that conversation has to be had in a softer, more informal type of tone, as opposed to the more formal communication of Pesach Aleph, which is all about the halachos of Avodas Yom HaKippur.
It's looking at the difference here is trying to teach you how to talk to a person. Sometimes you have to use the Lashon Kosher, mm-hmm. like it's out there, but knowing that Aaron was a regular Sholem, uses, I guess, speaks often to people to get a calm tone. The version changes tone of voice now, so it's like, this is the way you should be talking to
him. Right, right. You can definitely say that as well as word. But communicating to Aaron directly involves a softening of the tone.
Well, that's the character of Aaron himself.
Right, exactly. You can say like that as well. You know, that Aaron's personality, you know, requires a different type of communication. And so Chachma goes on. And, you know, talks about what essentially is a Gemara, which actually we learned in the Mein Kappen learning, you know, about a month or two ago. The name is Smith of the Zot Yom Aaron of HaKodesh, El Mitzvah Shnei B'nei Aaron. The Lama HaYetzarech Leimor Ezeh HaDavar Shal Be'atzar LaKodesh HaShvi, V'yom HaShvini L'Miluim. Now, you know, this whole parasha is strange, says the Meshech Chachma, because remember, so the sons of Aaron die, on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, right? Now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to Moshe Rabbeinu on Rosh Chodesh Nisan and tells him all about the Avodas Yom HaKippurim. You know, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, we're already cleaning for Pesach. What were you talking about? Yom Kippur, it's a little bit premature, right? Why are you talking about, you know, the Avodas Yom HaKippurim basically a year before the Avodas Yom HaKippurim actually takes place, right? So, he just he's skipping a few lines. Amar Yishali Beish Yuma. Yishali, the beginning of Yuma, says as follows: Ma Yom HaKippur Mechaper, As Mitzvah Tzadikim Mechaperes. Right. The juxtaposition over here is to tell you as follows: that Moshe Rabbeinu was being told by Hashem, just as Yom Kippur atoned, so too the depths of Tzadikim atone as well. So although chronologically there's really no connection between the deaths of Aaron's sons and Yom Kippur, thematically, they're very connected. There's a kapara with Yom Kippur, there's a kapara with Mitzvah Tzadikim. Now, how Mitzvah Tzadikim is Mechaper, he's actually going to spend the next paragraph talking about, which is very, very fascinating. Similarly, says the Yerushalmi, the love of Tzomach, Mitzvah Miriam of Parah Azumah, that's also appeared in our Bavli and Mari Kappa. How come the death of Miriam is conveyed by the Torah next to the parasha of Parah Azumah? Now, Parah Azumah Mechaperes also, the Mitzvah Tzadikim is also Mechaperes, right? And it's the same idea that the death of Tzadikim, our Mechaper, is also brought out by the juxtaposition of Miriam's death to the story of, or the halakhos of the Parah Azumah, right? Furthermore, says the Yerushalmi, Lama Nismachal Mitzvah Aaron, the Shira Samuchos, why does the Torah juxtapose the death of Aaron when recounting also as well the breaking of the Luchos, right, this later on in the Zohar, Ma Shira Samuchos Mechaperes Av Mitzvah, Ma Shira Samuchos Kashul Vneam Makom, Av Mitzvah Tzadikim. Just as the breaking of the Luchos was grievous in the eyes of Hashem, so too the death of Tzadikim are grievous in the eyes of Hashem. So you have three juxtapositions, right? Yom Kippur is like Mitzvah Tzadikim, that both of them are Mechater. Parah Azumah is like Mitzvah Tzadikim, that both of them are Mechater. And Shvirat HaLuchos is like Mitzvah Tzadikim, not that both of them are Mechater, but both of them are grievous, are kosher, as they are welcome. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is pained, so to speak, by both of these events. Okay, so why the three analogies and what of each of them teaches? So says Rashi Chachma, each analogy tells us a little bit about this concept of Nisach Tzadikim, of the depths of Tzadikim. Habir, the Yom HaKippurim, the Chaper, the Fashiru, Eitz Ratzon. Why did Yom HaKippurim, why did Yom Kippur serve as the time of atonement? It's because it's the time of Ratzon, the time of divine favor before God.
So who in his school is Amalka Baruch Hu? This is a school of different idea. Asher Bo Yechater Avon Amal Bnei Yisrael. Why is Yom Kippur worth it in the Chater? That's the way the Rebbe Shlomo set it up. You know, that Yom Kippur is a time which has a special quality of atonement which is associated with it. Came to meet us tzaddikim who aids Rasta. So too, when the tzaddikim passed away, that's where Akash Baruch Hu has set it up. It's a time of divine favor before God. Why? Because Rochev Arovo starts to Sameach, the very love Naki the tzaddik, who Mechata, because so to speak, again, obviously you have to say Kivyokol, like 20 different times over here, but so to speak, HaKadosh Baruch Hu experiences the death of tzaddikim as a pleasure for him. Why? Because here this untainted neshama goes up to Gan Eden. It's a time of rejoicing in the heavens. And since, again, from our perspective, it's difficult, but from God's perspective, this great fabric is being ushered, this wonderful neshama is being ushered into the Olam HaEmes. So it's a time of divine favor, so to speak. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was happy. So it's a good time to be able to, you know, to achieve good things like kapara down here on earth. However, says the Meshech Chachma, if you want the death of tzaddikim to be mechater, it has to be like Yom Kippur. In what sense is it like Yom Kippur? Well, says the Meshech Chachma, Yom Kippur is not automatically mechater. The aim of Yom Kippur and mechater, when is Yom Kippur atone? Only when you treat Yom Kippur as a holy day is Yom Kippur mechater. If for you, you know, you go out and you make a kol nidre ball on the night of Yom Kippur, you treat Yom Kippur like it's any other day, and you don't appreciate the sanctity of what Yom Kippur is all about, Yom Kippur is not going to work to be mechaper for you. It's not automatic. You have to appreciate Yom Kippur in order for Yom Kippur to have that power. Change the status. The same thing is true with the death of tzaddikim. If you take him seriously and attribute honor to him and you elevate, you know, your opinion of that tzaddik, of yourself in the chaver, then the death of that tzaddik can be a source of kapar. But just like Yom Kippur, if you disparage the tzaddik, even just in your heart, you don't see him as being anything special, so his death is not going to be mechaber. It's not going to be mechaber either, right? So the first thing we see, from the notion, from the fact that the Yerushalmi compares the death of tzaddikim to Yom Kippur, is that the same way that Yom Kippur can only be mechaber if you treat it seriously, so too the death of the tzaddik can only be mechaber if you know, take the tzaddik seriously. It's not an automatic sort of thing. You have to appreciate who the person was. You have to appreciate the loss, right? And then we can start talking about the ability of the death of the tzaddik to be mechaper. That's Yisod number one, which he lays down over here. Again, when we learn Life Kaufman, we raise the question, but how does this work? You know, the death of the tzaddikim, you know, is mechaper. Is it just an automatic thing? I didn't know that he died, right? That was, I'm sorry? Right? Right, you know, I mean, the person could not find out for years at a certain time. Right, there were no blogs, you know, there were no tweets, you know, the person may not know that the tzaddik was nishter, right? So here he's saying that the death of the tzaddik is, you know, being mechaper is contingent on our treating the tzaddik seriously, thinking that he's an other kasha, much the way that Yom Kippur is only mechaper if we treat Yom Kippur seriously. That's the connection to Yom Kippur. So let's keep reading, right? If the kapara an individual one or a national one, let's keep reading. The Akakap Omar, after the bracket, Akakap Omar, Dukmas Paraduma. Right? The second thing Yerushalmi says is that Paraduma and Nisat Tzaddikim are also compared one to another. Just as Par Aduma is Mechaper, so to Nisat Tzaddikim is Mechaper. What's the analogy? He says the analogy is the same. Right? Par Aduma is Gorem of Tahara. Kain al Yidei Nisat Tzaddik, Nisover Ha'odom Lassos Shuvah, Ulatar Mechatov, Shemitzbonehim barot the naflo shel hezeh mayasu azuvei hakir v'chayotei boteh. Right? Said the Neshech Chochma, one shouldn't think that the notion of mitzvah tzaddik and being mechafir is an automatic. Right? Oh, okay. So so-and-so died. Okay. He was an olam kosher. Wow. You know, now my sins are taken care of. No. How does Parah Aduma work? Parah Aduma is the process that involves purification. Right? So too, mitzvah tzaddikim is not an automatic. Right? One has to go through a process of purification. And here, the purification is an inner spiritual purification. The person is supposed to use the death of the tzaddik as a trigger to start thinking about his own mortality. As he puts it, again, according to Rabbi Markoffa, if the great cedars have fallen prey to the fire, what's going to be with the shrubs? Right? In other words, if a great tzaddik can pass away, you know, so what's going to be with all the rest of us? You know, the tragic death is a reminder to all of us of our mortality and the need to fix everything up and have everything in order, you know, before that day comes. Oh, there are high vineyards in Israel. Or, similar to what Mark says in Sanhedrin about the gang members in the town of Reb Zeira, who said, so only Ad Hashta, Hadalon Gav, the boy Rachme Alon, when Reb Zeira passed away, the gang in his town were upset. Well, why were the gangs in his town upset? And it's not like, you know, not like he had that much interaction with the sharks, you know, these sort of things, right? So the gang members said, you know, at least when Reb Zeira was alive, whatever we did, you know, he was Davin, and it helped us. You know, there were full gang members, you know, okay, so, you know, murdering, right? You know, they did all kinds of unspeakable things. So they had tremendous, they respected their mothers, and they respected their parents, they respected the Talmud Chacham. The local Gadol was an urban Gadol. I mean, you know, we don't talk too much about what we do when we don't go to Shir, but we had a tremendous appreciation of what he was because he was asking for us. Okay, that's something, you know, they appreciated when he died. You know, that now they weren't going to have him, they were sticking up for them. Is there any Sahara, Kippur Aduma? That is a form of Sahara. Just like the Parah Aduma brings with it purity, so too the Mitzvah Tzaddikim is supposed to work, not as an automatic, oh, he's on, okay, great, so that knocks off 20 of my Aneiros. No. It's supposed to be a trigger to get us to think into Tshuva. And then, the death of the Tzaddikim can be Mechaper.
So what you're saying here, Dr. is so bad,
In the Gemara they said, well, he's dead. Now we don't have anyone sticking up for us. We're Michael Pishuva, right? It does lead to that. You know, they get rid of the leather jackets. You know, put on kapotas, and you know that's it, right? But Right. So there's a basic tension in the Tzlukim itself about another view. Were they tzaddikim or were they being blamed for something? So on the one hand, they do something wrong. On the other hand, the Pasuk itself says, "Bikrovai Yekadesh," HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I will be sanctified with those who are close to me. So in other words, apparently, that Pasuk considers them to be great tzaddikim. If you recall, when we learned Meshech Chacham back in Shmini, Meshech Chacham had a fascinating interpretation where he says, their sin was really rather minuscule. You know, okay, they messed up, but again, under normal circumstances, it wouldn't have been enough, you know, to cause the wrath of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to come down the way in which it did. But in the aftermath of the Maisa HaEgel, when, you know, the Jewish people looked and they saw, well, we committed this incredible sin, and yet HaKadosh Baruch Hu seems to have, you know, totally forgiven it, so there could have arisen a sense that, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is easily placated. And the death of Nadav Avihu was so important in order to bring home to the people that, no, that's not true. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is incredibly stringent with those who violate his will. So in a sense, they were karbanos. In other words, they were great tzaddikim who made a tiny error, but they died in order to bring this, to trigger the thought. And again, it connects to what he's saying over here. You know, the people look at them and say, wow, they sinned in a minute fashion and were struck down in such a fashion. What on earth are we going to do? Right? And how can we stand up against this incredible wrath of the Ribbono Shel Olam? Right? So now, they were tzaddikim. Again, they were tzaddikim who sinned in a mild fashion, but, you know, their giving of their lives was a form of mitzvah tzaddikim mechaperes.
Because in a way, what was the real sense? Not that they brought the car in, because they were eventually supposed to be, but they did it without being told, so it was right. Ramah says they were murder malchus.
Right.
So that's what they got. And since they were burning Shalom, that's punishment by prophecy, by Sadiq Fosh with the siren,
you know?
So he's the exact pressure, so not that they used to be a cup for him, but they were
Right, 100%. I thought the Rambam was definitely the doctrine, you know, Kilchot HaSaira over here. So there's one third, analogy which the Yishalmi brings, that just like the Shvirat Halukot was difficult in the eyes of the Ribbono Shel Olam, so too is the mitzvah of Tzaddikim. Kshirat Halukot HaPirush, Sheyesh Tzedek HaMuchlati, Tzedek HaMitzaris. I think he coined the terms over here. But what I think he's getting at, we'll see it as the paragraph continues, there's objective tzidkus, that's what he calls tzedek hamuchlati, when a guy is a tzaddik by anybody's standard, and tzedek hamitzaris, right, which I think he means subjective tzidkus, subjective righteousness. He's more of a tzaddik than the other guy, but, you know, inherently he's maybe not such a tzaddik. Kimo b'darosov ha'yatzadik, ha'b'daros yishalavro, b'chulat ha'yatzadik, tzedek ha'mitzadik. Classic example would be Noach, according to one of the interpretations in Chazal. Tzadik ha'yo b'darosov, he was the tzadik in his generation, meaning, relative to his generation, he was a tzadik, but had he lived in the generation of Avraham Avinu, wouldn't have measured up in quite the same way. Hukimo, yeshra ha'muchlati, v'ra ha'mitzadik, וכמו כי בוסו להזכיר אבוני, שעכשיו הייתי צדיק, ועכשיו נגדך, אני ראשו. There's also, you know, conversely, there's also an idea of being a objective ראשו, also a subjective ראשו. Right? In other words, one can be a ראשו by any standard. One can be a ראשו relative to, you know, someone who's a tremendous צדיק. Yeah.
The subject of
objectivity
is oneself, yourself, or
it sounds like from Hashem's perspective, you know, Hashem does have a notion. Hashem, you know, grades on a curve. Basically what it comes down to. Hashem grades, on occasion, Hashem grades on a curve. You know, okay, you did, you got, on the one hand, you got a 40 on the test, but since everybody else in the class got a 35 on the test, you're the smartest guy in the class. You know, you're getting an A+, you're going to be valedictorian. You know, on the other hand, if you grade on the curve, you know, it can mess you up in the other way. Everybody else got 100, and you got an 80. Okay, so an 80 would be minus, you know, just develop, yeah, but relative to everybody else that got 100 on the test, you know, so you may fail with your 80, right? That's the notion of grading on the curve. HaKadosh Baruch Hu grades on the curve on occasion, right? You know, there is how HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides when to grade on a curve and when to grade objectively, I don't know. Right? But there's this notion that a historical application, you know, does graze on a curve. Radesha Amu Hilo Machayev Waniyim. That's the famous story in Chazal, or the same statement in Chazal, that Hillel is going to cause all of the Aniyim, all of the poor people, to be held accountable for their Bittul Torah. So the Aniyim, you know, all the poor people will appear before the Ribbono Shel Olam, you know, at the end of time, and he'll say, how come you didn't learn? I'll say, Ribbono Shel Olam, what do you want from us? You know, we had no money, we were running around. Aye, but Hillel, who had no money and was most in effort to learn Torah. So, what do you mean, aye, Hillel? Okay, that's Hillel's issue. What's that got to do with me? Why are you judging me relative to Hillel? In other words, and if there was, Mamashah, and if there was no Hillel, if Hillel never existed, it sounds like, the Gemara is saying, that all the Aniyim would get off scot-free. It's only because, you know, never, Hillel came along, and it was such a big, you know, Talmud Chacham and Machlis, despite his poverty, that now it messes life up, you know, for all the poor Aniyim, you know, who don't have any excuse anymore. Mamashah, either it is an excuse or it's not an excuse. So, says the Meshech Chacham, the fact that you could say Hillel Machayvis or Aniyim, indicates that there's a notion of grading on a curve. Well, you know, if he could do well, so how come the rest of you can't do well?
I said this over in a Shabbos Shuvah drasha once, by the way. It's a myriad because one, I heard that the very first Rosh Hashanah I learned in YU, there was a Rebbe in YU at the time of Shlomo Drillman, the Tzaddik was Rosh's son, who's very big in Chaim Berlin today. So at the time, he was Rosh Hashiva in YU, was a Talmud of Rebbe Chanan from Baranovich, and then as a child, a teenager, came to the United States, learned by the Rosh in YU. And at the time, he was the Baal Tekeya in Yeshiva. This is Rosh Hashanah of 1990, going back about 20 years ago. So it was Baal Tekeya in Yeshiva, and he dashed him, in the afternoon between Mincha and Nair. So what did he say about the drasha? I never forgot the drasha. So he said, we say that on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, Sifrei Chayim, the Sifrei Mesim, Sufim Lefanav, that the Malachim can't sing Shira to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, and Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, because it's a scary time. The books of Chaim and Mason are open up in front of him. So usually that's translated the books of life and death. So who's going to be inscribed for Chaim and Sakeret? Who's going to be inscribed in the other book? But he said, just said Rabbi Truman, that's not what Chazal meant. Because the books of life and death would be Sifrei Chaim, the Sifrei Mothers. What do you mean Sifrei Chaim, the Sifrei Mason? Right? It should be the books of life and death. Who's inscribed with Chaim? Who's inscribed Chalila? The Mavetz, Chaim and Mason. This is the question number one. Question number two. Okay, I understand why Sifrei Mason is a scary prospect. The fact that the books of death are opened up. But why is Sifrei Chaim so scary? Sifrei Chaim is reassuring. Right? The thing that causes the trepidation should be Sifrei Mason. So Rabbi Drillman went on to say the following shot. I think it was the dumb shot. Said like this: doesn't mean the books of life and death. The person gets up to Tishamayim, or the person is being judged on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, and the Rebbeinu Shel Olam takes off the shelf, so to speak, the Sifrei Mason, meaning the books filled with the names of all of the great people of the past who are now dead, who achieved tremendous things in their lifetimes. And he goes down the list, and he says, Nu, why weren't you like the Chofetz Chaim? He goes down all the names in history. Why weren't you like Rebbe Chanan Batzin? Why weren't you like the Shas? Why weren't you like this one? Why weren't you like that one? And that's the Sifrei Chaim. That's the Sifrei Mason. So that's a scary prospect, but there's an answer to that. You want me to be like the Chofetz Chaim? The Chofetz Chaim grew up in an environment. He didn't have Facebook or anything like that. He just these sad words, from the time that he was a little kid. That was all environment. It was suffused with Torah. You can't really have a tie on me, Rebbeinu Shel Olam. I grew up in a very different world, in a very different environment. And, the things that might be expected from the Chofetz Chaim, it's not fair to expect from me. So I said, Rebbeinu Shel Olam, okay, I'm a Kabbal. Let's pull out the other book. What's the other book? The other book, said Rabbi Drillman, is the Sifrei Chaim. What's the Sifrei Chaim? The book with the names of all of my contemporaries who were able to achieve great things in tzidkus and learning and whatnot, far beyond what I was able to achieve. And the Rebbeinu Shel Olam goes down the list and says, you grew up with Chaim Yaakov, right? You were in first grade with him, yeah? True. So Chaim Yaakov, who's from the living, who's alive, he's alive right now. Chaim Yaakov today is an unbelievable tzaddik, a goyim and everything like that. You were in first grade together. You went to elementary school together. How come he's him and you're you? So now already, that's a scary prospect. Because I can't answer, look, he grew up in Robin. What do you want from me? Nah. He grew up, he was my neighbor in the apartment building. We went to school together. We played in the yard together. We had the same exact experiences together. And somehow he went this way and I went that way. For that, I'm not going to have an answer. So that's the very Drillman. That's the chapter in the Gemara. Sifrei Chaim, Sifrei Mesim, Suchen Lefanos. Right? The books of the living and the dead are opened up before the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. And reading off these names, contemporaries and from previous history, that's such a scary notion. The fact that I'm judged subjectively relative to the people who went through life with me. And they were all over the Gedula, and I, say whatever I say. So that's going to be the scariest thing on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur that I'm not going to be able to deal with. Right? at that point, to put this on tape, so I don't know who's listening to this, but at that point, the Special Shechter walked into this Medrash for Midrash. The whole place stood up, and he stopped the drush of Rabbi Joel, and he said, "You see Rav Heschel over there, just came in, he grew up just like you guys." I think he said guys, but he grew up just like you, went to high school just like you, went to college just like you, and you see that he's a Gadol Yisrael, you know, so everyone who grew up, even in an American environment, could achieve that that level of godly Tzaddik. So, that's this notion that the Meshech Chasman is bringing out over here, that sometimes there's a subjective tzitzkut and a subjective vision. It doesn't just depend on what you are objectively. You're measured against other people. Hashem grades on a curve. Again, maybe not always, but on occasion. But Baruch Hu grades on a curve.
That's really the level of behavior.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't get away.
Yeah, it's pretty scary, actually, when you think about it. So that he says, so v'nyesh tzaddik, now that we've developed this idea that there's subjective, you know, judgment on the path of the Rav Shalom, if there's a tzaddik asher humara umad v'chadar, if there's a tzaddik who leads and teaches the generation, u'bnei doro einam nosim upon v'einam son of Rav Lutvaro, and the people of that generation, yeah, the rabbi said this, the rabbi said that, you know, they listen, they don't listen, they don't really pay attention to anything they have to say. Yeah, that was very, very nice. So I will have little lomdu, and they should have learned, but they didn't. Ad Hashem Yisbarach Harotza V'Yisrod Kam Lokeach HaTzadik. So what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu do to the Nezaki Klal Yisrael? He takes the Tzadik away. He takes the Tzadik away? I don't understand. The Tzadik was helping them out. Yeah, but they weren't listening to the Tzaddik. So Kozman, the Tzaddik, was alive. They were subjectively Rishonim. You know, look at this great Tzaddik who's in their midst, and look at where they are, and my, they don't measure up at all. But once the Tzaddik is taken away, oh, Neged Shar HaUmot, relative to the other nations that are out there, Hema Tzaddikim, relatively speaking, the surviving Jewish people, without the benefit of this Tzaddik, relative to the nations of the world, they're great tzaddikim. Subjectively, when the tzaddik was alive, they were graded on a curve vis-a-vis the tzaddik, and they were, you know, they were all failing. But once the tzaddik is taken away, they're graded on a curve vis-a-vis the nations of the world, and all of a sudden, they're the biggest tzaddikim that are out there. This is reminiscent of the breaking of the luchos. Why? Shishida Osam. Chazal say, what was Moshe Rabbeinu's svara in breaking the luchos? The luchos represented, so to speak, the ksuba between Hashem Yisbarach and the Jewish people. By breaking the luchos, he was, so to speak, divorcing God from the Jewish people. Again, in a kind of homiletic sense, he was divorcing God from the Jewish people. So Mineila, when now he could come back to the Ribono Shel Olam and say, "Oh, they sinned with a golden calf. All right." But they're not married, you know. It's a relationship outside of marriage. It's not actually, you know, considered like adultery. Right. So therefore, just as the luchos were broken by Moshe Rabbeinu, ultimately to benefit the Jewish people. Right? Because then, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu can go back to the Rav Shalom and say, what do you want from them? Okay, it wasn't a golden, they did the wrong thing, but it wasn't like they were cheating on God, so to speak. So too, the taking of the tzaddik actually is a rachmanus that the Rav Shalom has on the Jewish people. By taking away the tzaddik, relatively speaking, the surviving Jewish people are considered to be relative tzaddikim, as opposed to the relative rishonim that they were before when the tzaddik was actually in their midst. Right? It's a fascinating interpretation. That's why he says tzaddikim v'chaperes, the way he's saying. Not that it even does anything to us, but just, again, it layers, it levels the playing field, it changes the curve. And now when HaKadosh Baruch Hu judges us, you know, we're being judged not relative to great tzaddikim, we're being judged, you know, relative to others who, you know, make us look good by comparison. And you may say, okay, but, you know, what the poor tzaddik do? You know, to be taken away in such a fashion. Again, that's always the question. The Rabbanu Shalom had this question right
in terms of how he operates, and we don't certainly don't fully understand. But the Meshech Rabba would say, this is a... Right, you know, because everyone is there, the tzaddik is taken off. Right, so, you know, whatever the answer to that question is, I don't know what the answer to that question is, the Rebbe Shalom knows what the answer to that question is, but one cheshbon is this cheshbon which is saying over here. I think it could refer even to someone who dies at a ripe old age. Meaning, you know, it's his absence which now enabled Kali Yisrael to be judged more favorably.
But certainly, we know that
Again, exactly how it works, I don't know, but right, in other words, certainly there's a timing issue over here. In other words, this tzaddik would not have died now necessarily. You know, the reason HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes him now is to be mezakeh the rest of Klal Yisrael. Now, that could be that he, you know, is 45, or could be that he's 95, right? In other words, you know, premature is also a relative term, premature to what? Right. So, you know, he died at 95 as opposed to, 120 or something like that. But I think that's the point over here. He is taken away at a time that ordinarily he would not have been taken away at. But it's natural. Right, so that would be true in terms of the second thing that he said, that you know, the tzaddik passing away is supposed to trigger us to do tshuva. Right? We're more likely to do tshuva when someone passes away at the age of 45 than when he passes away at 95. In terms of this last issue, though, that the tzaddik's passing now allows Hashem to judge us more favorably, I don't think it matters, you know, as to the age of the tzaddik. The point is that up till now we were being judged on a curve with the tzaddik, and now we took him off the curve, you know, so now the judgment, it bumps us up, right? It's not like, you know, everybody in the class got a 40 except for one guy got 100 and, you know, messed up the curve, right? Now we took the guy who got 100 out of the picture, so now, so the curve gets adjusted accordingly. Right, again, according to the second interpretation that we gave over here. Here, again, I don't think it matters how we react according to this interpretation over here. You know, the point is that the removal of the tzaddik now changes the curve and the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, judges the Jewish people. Yeah, you're right. In terms of reaction, but again, I don't think this layup idea is not built on reaction. Right. So now the 40 is the 8. Right. Exactly. Okay. There's certain pieces that I wanted to focus on. I think what we'll do. Talk a little bit about the next piece on Reish Lamed Gimel at the bottom. The Zos Yovo Aaron HaKodesh. The Medrash Amalei HaKodesh Baruch Hu Ramosha
לא כשם שאף הסובה וכו', אלא בכל שעה שרוצה לקונת איקונס, זה actually איקונס בסדר הזה. Right, the Medrash points out an interesting phenomenon, and here we're going to see a very famous film ago that builds on this. The whole parasha of Achrinos that describes the Zot Yovel Aaron HaKodesh under these circumstances, will Aaron be allowed to come to the Kodesh HaKodeshim, does not actually mention Yom Kippur until the very end of the parasha. Right? The whole Avodah Yom HaKippurim, the words Yom Kippur are not mentioned at all, describes the entire procedure of what's done, and it's only in Pasuk Chof Tet, you know, in Perek Tzayin, that the idea of Yom Kippur is first mentioned. This should be an eternal law for you. Right? On the 10th day of the 7th month, you should share, and the implication then is, and you should do this whole Seder. Very, very strange. I mean, if, you know, you would think that the Chumash would start off by saying, okay, this is the Avodah on Yom Kippur, and this is how it goes. Yom Kippur isn't mentioned at the very, very end. So there's a Medrash, which describes, like what Yom Kippur saying to Moshe, Vizot Yobo Aaron HaKodesh, that Aaron can come into the Kodesh HaKodoshim simply by doing Kaseder Hazeh, this order, this whole Shah Shirosa Likonis, at any time that he wants to go in. And that leads to a very famous and very beautiful shot from the Vilna Gaon. He continues quoting the Vilna Gaon. He named his paper to be Akeser, Kuba Bishim Hagwan, the Tirushay Poshim. The Aaron Hayoyoko Likonis Tommy of Seder Hazeh. Aaron HaKohen could have gone into the Kodesh HaKodashim if he wanted to every single day of the year. Right? He just has to do the Avodah, which we call the Avodah Yom HaKippur. But this Avodah is not specific to Yom Kippur. This Avodah is what you do to go into the Kodesh HaKodashim. This goes, Yom Aaron El HaKodesh. When Aaron does this, he can go into the Kodesh HaKodashim. And if he wants to, he can do it right now on a regular, on a regular day in this one, it doesn't have to wait for Yom Kippur. Rak Shabbano, Ohio Rishoyim. Rak Yom HaKippur. The only thing that's different is that after Aaron, so his children would only be able to do this on Yom Kippur. So in other words, the way the Vilna Gaon says the Pesukim are to be written is the following fascinating way. First, the Ribbono Shel Olam outlines how Aaron can come into the Kodesh HaKodashim, and he can do it whenever he wants, as long as he does this Seder, right? And here's the Seder, and has nothing to do with Yom Kippur. At the end of the parasha, it says, by the way, going forward, after Aaron dies, this whole Avodah is going to be restricted to Yom Kippur. But in reality, it says the Vilna Gaon, it's not really correct. It's a little bit of a misnomer to describe this Avodah as Avodah Yom HaKippurim. This is really Avodah Knitza L'Kodesh HaKodashim. This is really what you do in order to come to the Kodesh HaKodashim, right? And it just so happens that the only time that we're allowed to go to the Kodesh HaKodashim after the death of Aaron is on Yom Kippur, right? But, in the time of Aaron, Aaron himself was allowed to do this whenever he wanted and go to the Kodesh HaKodashim. So it's a fascinating interpretation, right? It fits very beautifully in the book. Right? I mean, maybe. Right? Well, maybe he did. How do you know that he did it? Right? But the question is, why should it be a difference? In other words, why is it that Aaron was entitled to use this whenever he wanted, whereas in the generations following Aaron, it was restricted to Yom Kippur? So, that's the Meshach HaKma. Again, building on the Vilna Gaon's interpretation of the following. In the Talmud Taimon, the reason which seems to be based on Mashikotav HaTzorno, the Sof Emor. What's HaTzorno, the end of Pashas Emor? Says the following. Hashikotav HaTzorno, Tuva HaTzorno, Aaron. So the Tzorno's comment on the fact that if you look at the end of Emor, that in Perek Chof Dalet, right, Perek Chof Dalet, Pasuk Gimel, right? No, Chof Dalet. Chof Dalet, Pasuk Gimel. It's describing the Hatzavat Haneros. It's describing the preparation of the menorah. So it says, Michutz Leparokas to Eidus to Olmod, Yarachot to Aaron, Me'erev Ad Boker Lepei Hashem Tzomir, Chukas Olam Dorot Reisha.
right, that that Aaron should set up the menorah in the Mishkan forever and ever. So that's a little bit of a contradiction. What do you mean Aaron should set it up forever and ever? What he really means to say is whoever the Kohanim are should take care of the menorah forever and ever. Why does it single out Aaron? Right? So it says the sign over there, for those 40 years when, you know, during the lifetime of Aaron, the Anon, the cloud was constantly, you know, the Anon Yakovod was constantly on the Mishkan day and night, because she calls it Ki'anan Hashem al Mishkan Yomo, that's what says in the Pasuk. V'lachein, ba'avodos shebe'echol, therefore, when it comes to the avodos, which are connected to the echol, which are done in the Kodesh, Shisham haya anan Hashem, haya dino otam arvoyim shana kumo biyom ha-kipurim. Shikosuf bo ki ba'anan eroel ha-kapara. So different yichachum chay. This is far no as follows. What does it say in our parasha, in Achremo? It says ki ba'anan eroel ha-kapara. You can only go into the Kodesh HaKodoshim with the anan, with the cloud. Now what's the anan? So in, we usually interpret the anan to mean the cloud created by the Torah being burned. You know, the cloud of smoke, which is going to be created by the Torah, by the incense. Right? And then Aaron is only allowed to go to the Kodesh HaKadosh by virtue of burning the incense when he goes in. Yes, that's the Torah, but it doesn't say, keep the Anan HaKadosh. It says, keep the Anan, right, with the presence of the cloud. So if the Anan HaKadosh surround Karyzo, as they did for the 40 years, the Karyzo in the Midwar until Aaron died, so therefore, that's the equivalent of the Anon being there. If the Anon is there, so that means that the one responsible for setting up any avoda in the Kodesh of the Kodesh HaKadoshim is Aaron, the Kohen Gadol, because the Kohen Gadol serves in the Kodesh of the Kodesh HaKadoshim when there is an Anon, either defined as the Anan HaKadosh or the Anani HaKadosh. The Divriti Chacham Chayim makes sense, says the Meshach Chacham. The Lochayim Kolos and Avoyim Shana Hayelo Shus, the Kohen Kaseder Adek, Lochayim Gadol Yom HaKipur. Right? So that explains the Bill of God. The final explains the Bill of God, says the Meshach Chachma. Why? Because the constant presence of the Anani HaKava during the 40 years made every day like Yom Kippur. Right? So it was a constant Yom Kippur. So during the time that Aaron served as Kohen Gadol, he had the right to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim any day as long as he did this Seder, keep it or none. Eroel HaKapolet. Because again, as long as there is an Anon, so then you can come into the Kodesh HaKadoshim using the Sages, right? So the Sfarno, you know, explains the perspective of the Zohar Gaon. So Lachain, Kansu, the Zohar Vaishu, the Haithu, Zohar Vaishu, the Zohar Vaishu, the Kodesh HaShri, Achat Vashana. That's why at the very end of the Parashah, it's mentioned, at the very end of the Zohar Vaishu, it discusses the fact that going forward, you should only go in Achat Vashana. Once a year on Yom Kippur, right? V'ha'yisazot, the very last pasuk, Tazai pasuk Ramadan, V'ha'yisazot, lochem chukat olam, this should be an eternal law for you, meaning going forward. The chapter of B'nai Yisrael, we call chatozom, achat bashoka. Now is every day. But going forward, chukat olam, it should only be achat bashoka. Once a year, shavadoros, going forward, the Jewish people are only considered to be like Malachim on Yom Kippur. Right? And we, once a year on Yom Kippur, because of our lofty status, we can simulate the Anani HaKavod through the Anan HaKitoris. In other words, the way to understand the Sukkim, I think, around the Meshach Chacham is follows. Really, the only thing that should entitle us to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim is the Anani HaKavod, when we're surrounded by such a level of Kiddush and Tahara, not above. Once a year, Klal Yisrael are zocha to the Madrega of Malachim. So Kodesh Baruch Hu says, okay, I'll cut your deal. Instead of having the Anani HaKavod, which you're not going to get, you can have an artificial Anani HaKavod through the Anan HaKitoris, through the cloud of Ketoris, you know, which will enable you to go in under those circumstances. The in Cain, after Lothar, after Emoso, Hoyolo Rishus, okay? And that's why Lothar, after the death of Aaron, had the right to go in, at least on Yom Kippur, because the Anan HaKitoris takes the role of the Anani HaKavod. You know, this is a beautiful explanation. The Gra is beautiful, the Sfar is beautiful, the Light Mashachat and put them together is beautiful. It also answers the basic question of the Tosfos. You know, the Tosfos says that the Zod Yom Aaron HaKodesh, you should, or keep it on Eiro El HaKapodet. Hashem says, I will only appear over the Kapodet with the Onan, right, with the cloud of Tzoras. Very strange way of putting it. Why would the Tosfos put it like that? Ki a royal akaparas the havas kitaras. Right? Make reference to the kitaras. What a strange way of referring to the kitaras. You refer to the kitaras as a cloud, right? It's the cloud which enables you to go in. So the answer is yeah. The cloud is really, it's not really the kitaras that allows you to go in. The kitaras enables you to duplicate on some level to simulate the unknowing akavah, which was really the reason, which would enable cloud, which would enable the kohen gadol to go into the Lishnai Belishnim once a year. You know, the Anan HaKetaris is just, a pale substitution for the Anani HaKavah, but it's really all about the real Anan, which are the Anani HaKavah. Okay, well, I just wish everybody a HaKashu V'Sameach, a Freyla Senevif, and a Kashu V'Sameach. Right now, I don't know if we'll have a Shir Pashas Kedoshim. I mean, Yom Tov and maybe we will. What's Yom Tov and Suzah? Okay, we'll make up to have a Shir Pashas Kedoshim. The Wednesday nights right after Teitzach, maybe we'll serve pizza with the Shir. Just kidding. No pizza. Just the beautiful, sweet words of the Meshachah. We'll pick up at Hashem after Teitzach. And we should all be both through the Gula Shleimah Amin.